Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
What's good, internet? It is Monday, April 2nd, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 147. It's Monday morning. I tried to do this without clapping. That's bad. My day should be totally picked up. We got a chicken dinner this morning, Danica. Mm-hmm. Thanks to you. Thanks to Danica's hard work. Ooh, got 3 kills. Yeah. SKS got the final kill. I think the footage isn't great because I may have not been spectating the right person. I was spectating.
Okay, but the footage also doesn't say, like, didn't pop up a kill on Pasquale's screen.
Okay,
and
well, there
on
you
mine,
go.
When I did that shot, it was like 3 kills, chicken dinner.
You should go into the replay and see if you can get a good, well shot replay. Yes. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me, obviously, Danica Herod. Also joining me on this snowy Monday morning, Patrick Klepek.
It's not snowing here.
That's good. And Rob Zachney.
It looks like a white Easter.
Ah, beautiful. It's a dream.
One might
like you want this time of year.
Yeah. One might even say a nor'eastern.
Okay.
Nice.
How's everyone doing? Everyone doing all right? We're moving into April despite the snow. Getting ready for PAX East.
Yeah, I'm chilling. My birthday's in 9 days.
Oh, hell yeah. You have plans? You have birthday plans?
I have a 10:30 a.m. Yakuza stream planned.
Oh, wow. The kind of the greatest gift of all.
Yes.
You know, crime boys. So, speaking of crime boys, I think actually we should kick things off pretty quickly here, because I know, Rob, you have some limited time. We all played a game with crime boys in it. Not Japanese, like, pretty boy crime boys. Kind of like rough and tumble 1970s American crime boys.
That'd be the next one, game. Yes. From
Joseph Ferris and, yeah, and that crew.
He's taken, yeah, on Japan.
We all have played and beat a way out, which is a thing I didn't expect to say I would have done. But we did it individually or different pairings. What are we all thinking about? Like, we talked a little bit about this on Friday. Patrick and I talked about how we kind of found our own fun with some of the kind of sandboxy elements, so like kind of toys and like weird things in the environment, mm-hmm, and some of the writing around that. But like,
I think we should start with Rob, because I think that we all felt a little bit better about the game than Rob did.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah. So again, like we were talking about last week, like, we sort of had a naive playthrough of it. Me and my girlfriend did when we were going through it. So we kind of went in straight faced and expecting this to kind of do what it says on the tin, right? And all the weirdness and all the stuff that actually makes the game kind of funny and sort of endearingly awkward in places, all of it just came across, at least our, like, when we first started playing it, as like just massive writing and execution fumbles. Plus, like, not like in terms of like what you do in the game, it didn't really click for either of us. Like, it just just as a game, it was kind of boring both to me and to my partner, right? Like, there wasn't a whole lot to it. And so I do think that the game opens with its worst, it puts its worst foot forward.
Yes, like, yes, I agree with that.
That prison sequence sucks. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we kind of dug into that on the last episode, because, boy, yeah, it really does. But
the ending...
Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things is the game does get better, and that it builds toward this really emotional ending. And I think this is a thing that a lot of people, if you read Kotaku's coverage of it, like, the game needs to be considered in light of its ending, which is very affecting in some ways, or trite and manipulative, if you don't want to be charitable, which my partner and I didn't really. Like, again, this is one of those things where, like, nothing really worked for us because the game hadn't really clicked for us at any point prior to sort of the last act. When the game sort of does this late game pivot, right as you think the game's about to end, there is sort of a revelation that fractures this relationship you've been building for the entire game. And then the game gets very sad and very maudlin in some ways. And by that point, like, it just didn't have any credit built up with us. Mm. So, like, my partner and I, like, yes, we were sad because, like, it is trying to use everything it possibly can to sort of pull on those heartstrings. But we sort of looked at each other at the end and we're like, but that was bullshit, right? And it was like, yeah, that was bullshit. And that's kind of where we came down. Like, it's effective. Mm. Like, at the end of the game, it's more effective than it's ever been. But has it earned the effect it's going for?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we kind of said this, but like there are scenes. There's a number of times in this game where my interest and buy-in ebbed and flowed, and there are moments where it earned it back for me. Where like I mentioned the fishing minigame on the last episode, where like, oh, you one person has to like splash and the other one hits the fish with a spear. Like, that was a great moment for Patrick and I, where we kind of
Sit on the mountain.
I know, oh, I'm so mad. Dude, did you read the other one, the other achievement that we missed with the moon landing? Fuck, dude, we missed a big one.
Because I fucked that up, huh?
Yeah, well, no, it's just we weren't patient enough. If we stayed...
I turned the TV... Oh, if we sat down again,
For 30 seconds, it would have worked. And there's like a lot of little, so there's lots of little like secret interactive things. They're not even secret interactive things, but things that if you interact with them in interesting ways, you'll get little achievements or weird side things. One of them is that you watch the moon landing happening, the moon landing happening. I don't know if it's like, I guess it's all timed out, yeah. God. I don't know. I'm not going to spoil it. Someone has a flight of fancy, is what I'll say. And the game shifts upon watching the moon landing. Yeah. If you like are patient enough to see it. It sounds amazing. Did you get it, Danica?
I got another little sequence that I need to post a video of on Twitter that I played with my friend Nick, friend of the show. Nick is next. And he had already played the game. So we played it on two different occasions, and he kind of like knew where to stop. So where we picked back up, it would just be like good the whole way through. But we had this encounter in the barn or at the farmhouse where he was playing the banjo and I started playing the piano at the same time. Right. And because we both did the sequence correctly, we got this little like cutscene where they did this like duet with the banjo and the piano. God. But
all that stuff is so cool.
It's really cool. But I had like a great time with the game, and I think it's because I watched you guys stream and the prison sequence, like I knew what to expect. So it was like I went in kind of knowing I wasn't gonna have a ton of fun with that.
Yeah.
But then like the last two thirds of the game, I really, really enjoyed, especially from when you get to the theater on, because it's kind of just like all action packed, those screens where it goes to just one of you and you're doing a bunch of button pressing.
Yeah, so there's like the kind of arc. I mean, we're going to talk broadly about the story of this game and maybe we'll give a spoiler warning to talk about specifics about the ending and some like the twists and stuff like that. But the basic arc is you escape from prison. You both of your characters have reason to want this like kind of criminal kingpin dead. And so you start working towards figuring out how to do that, which means like, you know, making sure that your family is cool and then making sure that you have like guns and that you have a plane and stuff like that. So you can go to this guy, you know, find out where he is. There's lots of like, go to meet this guy and interrogate him and figure out where the criminal kingpin's HQ is. you get a really broad answer. You learn that he's in Mexico and that's like all you needed to know exactly where to parachute.
I know. That's good.
Mexico is big. But there is that great sequence. I really like the sequence. And Rob, I'm curious if y'all, how you and your partner responded to it, which is at some point the kingpin learns that you're coming after him. Not the kingpin, not Marvel's the kingpin. This non-name, no, he has a name. This Harvey Keitel looking, also his name is Harvey, criminal kingpin, sends a hitman after you. And you end up having this like, this experience in a theater where you're going through all like the backstage being chased by a hitman, and the whole game is presented to you, pretty much the whole game is presented to you in split screen where one player is on one side, one player is on the other side. Even in multiplayer, even in online multiplayer, you're always seeing what your other player, what your companion is doing. And in this, they ended up splitting it three ways so you can always see what the hitman is doing, which I really liked. And then the other sequence that Danik was just talking about is another kind of action sequence where instead of having split screens, you go from one player's perspective to the other, and you just kind of, the camera kind of single take, you know, moves through this space going from floor to floor and like room to room and changing who's the perspective character. And I don't know that either of those things is like groundbreaking, cinema or, you know, cinematic design or visual design, but for whatever reason, those sequences both worked really well for me. So I'm curious, Rob, if that those kind of plays, those sorts of gimmicks worked for you and your partner.
No. I feel like I'm turning into Tom Check with this game in some ways, right? Where I'm just like relentlessly like, no, this doesn't work for me because like I've seen the things this game is aspiring to do, I've seen done so much better on so many other levels, and these sequences are sort of effective, but they are so on rails that like literally, like, you know, it's almost like I'm back to playing an on-rail shooter like Rebel Assault or something back in the day. Like, for instance, a lot of the sequences where, like, you're fleeing through the movie theater as this assassin chases after you. Worst assassin in history. Like, he's bad. Like, they're like, we're sending our top killer on this. This is a serious guy. Guy opens fire from, like, 50 yards away with, like, a pistol and just starts, like, just shelling you.
Oh, he has a silenced. He has, like, a silenced pistol or something.
Yeah. And so this guy is just, like, chasing after you, just endlessly, like, firing shots.
He had
just
so much ammo.
Oh, man. It was...
He like, shot so
right,
many
he
bullets.
Covered well, in clips, right?
Yeah, it's also because he was, like, really bad at finding angles to actually hit you at. There's a bit where you're, like, crawling behind cover, and it's so easy for him to have just, like, walked 10 steps the other direction to completely invalidate your cover. He just doesn't do it. He's, like, he's along for the ride, you know?
But like, so in that movie theater sequence, one of the things that my partner was worried about going into this game is that she wouldn't have like the dexterity to play it. She plays everything on PC. And so she has like no muscle memory built up for controllers, right? She was kind of worried about that. But she ended up like swinging back the other way where she was like, this could have more game in it, right? Like even by those standards, like it is like when you're running through the theater, for instance, your character is so piloted in some ways by the sequence, like it is actually really hard to get stumble over the obstacles in the space because like the character has a really strong like gravitational pull toward the correct path through the sequence. And so it's kind of a nifty sequence, but it is so thoroughly guided that it ended up losing a lot of that suspense in part again because like the least effective hitman in history is not a scary villain after a few minutes. Like, yep, he's still shooting. Oh, he's really beating his head against that door that we moved
hey,
the cabinet in
that
front
was
of.
His foot. He's beating his foot, not his head.
I didn't care that much. I didn't care that much about him being interesting or likable because I feel like throughout the entirety of playing that game, I cared so much just about coordinating with the person that I was playing with and learning the characters that we were playing and listening to them and laughing at their voice lines sometimes or whatever. But the other like outside players, I just didn't care that much about besides like Leo's wife, who was really good.
Leo's wife is very good. Patrick, you came. I remember those are two sequences that you liked a lot. What was it that you liked a lot about those two sequences?
Well, for one, I thought like the way kind of swap between the screens was like fairly effective, like as a gimmick. I don't know if how that would have held up going forward. But I think one like sort of like through line with like sort of this discussion and like the where Austin, you and I found enjoyment in the game, and Danica ended up finding enjoyment in her playthrough was that I think the game actually poorly communicates its tone. And we found a tone and then like stuck with it, and then that became our interpretation of the game more due to the work we were doing than the game was doing itself. And so you have games that are like do a large unexpected But workable tonal shifts, like the Wolfenstein series, like, is a series that is all over the map in terms of, like, comedy and drama and all sorts of different sequences that end up working in a way that are impressive, because most games either stick to one tone and that's it, or they do tone switch that it doesn't work at all. And, like, it's, like, I found it so, like, A Way Out is so bizarre because it doesn't communicate, like, what does this want to be, a comedy? Like, does, right. does it want to be funny? Like, is some of the humor an accident? Like, it's bizarre.
It's and baffling.
especially up front, it doesn't communicate what it's going to be. Like, if, like, in the beginning, it's like, these are two, like, bumbling buffoons, and they're gonna be just, like, kind of, like, barely making it through. And at the end, we're gonna hit you with an emotional gut punch that it's gonna work even better because you came into this experience largely, like, dealing with, like, two buffoons. Like, that's a way of doing, like, a twist, is, like, setting you up with, like, a certain tone and then switching at the last second. But this game, like largely fails at doing, and I think if you, part of what we were able to do for a lot, I think a lot of people who either just watched the stream or maybe went on to play it themselves, was like, oh, like, there was expectation setting, like, oh, this is what this game is or could be for you. And, like, the game, what the game pitches, and this is the game that Rob and his partner experienced, like, I understand, like, I could have seen myself doing that exact thing, where instead of, like, looking at the goofy bits and going, like, oh, like, that's interesting, like, let's lean the hell into this, it's more like, what the fuck is this game doing? Like, it doesn't seem like it's figured out what its voice or its identity is, because I don't actually think it did. I think the game is, like, a huge failure in a lot of parts, and instead we just found things to kind of, like, grasp onto and, like, build our own personal sort of, like, narrative on. Like, I don't, like, I'm loath to give the game too much credit, because I think actually it didn't realize what it was even doing well, and there just happened to be enough of those bits that I found a through line that I found the game to be profoundly enjoyable.
I think the last, like, quarter of it was actually, like, the last, like, quarter of the game for me actually felt pretty strong. Not, like, I think there were still obviously areas where the writing and stuff could be improved, and I think a lot of the game could have actually been improved with better line reads, honestly.
Yes.
But I do feel like the last, like, quarter or so of the game, I was really on the edge of my seat. I was really, really invested, and it felt like a good game to me.
I really wish it didn't turn into, like, off-brand Uncharted in the final.
Uncharted at the end. Oh my god!
Like, I love
the shooting stuff. Yeah.
So you go hours and hours without ever firing a gun. Or you maybe, you know, you have a gun in a couple of situations, but the gun play is not really a thing. Like, we didn't ever shoot anybody in that game until it was time to be an action game. And then for, like, 34 minutes, it was an action game. It was, like, a pretty mediocre one. And it was frustrating to some degree because it had felt like guns were really powerful in that game up until that point. You know, you have a gun when you're doing this kind of, like, gas station holdup. You have a gun in a sequence where you're kind of being cornered by police. And gunfire even feels scary. You're being shot at while you're escaping the prison, stuff like that. And that all works really well. And then, like, all right, time to just kill 40 people on the way to get our revenge. And it just felt so out of place to me. Because it didn't, that to me was a moment where it really didn't understand what it did well. Whether that thing was making me care about these two goofballs because they both sit down on a swing at the same time and then have to decide, like, are we really going to be on the swing together? Or if it was the kind of more, like, family-oriented stuff where you're playing basketball with one of their kids and, like, that stuff all worked for me really well.
Or it's when there's a pool and you can go onto the diving board and then jump into the water for no reason other than they just built in the ability to do that. And video games are full of things the characters do that make no sense. It's just you pushing and pulling at the world and seeing what it will can and will won't let you do. But they never comment on it. They just, like, presume, like, this is just, you know, this dude or this girl wandering a world just, like, interacting with things. It's just a normal thing that people do. And in the game, like, probably the funniest line in the whole game is, like, the most self-aware meta line is, like, when, yeah, you jump through this pool, you get out, and if you do it a second time, like, the characters go, well, guess we're doing that again. Like, not really sure why I jumped in this pool. And, like, I was dying. You like, it's dying. Such a – that's, like, a line where it's, like, it's understanding – that's like that. I wanted a full game that was, like, playing in that. It didn't all need to be metatextual,
right?
Meta commentary,
right.
But, like, that was, like, that line, like, I wanted the game to, like, more, like, focus in on those moments. And you can build something like there is an emotional core to this game that, like, worked. I just think sometimes, like, we were building on top of something, and with the game wasn't giving us enough tools. And I think sometimes we were doing more of the work for the game because we ended up sort of role playing in a way that the game didn't necessarily justify, but we were kind of like adding our own fiction on top of the fiction that was there.
It was giving us blocks, and we were putting them into different configurations, and often ones that the game was not ready to support. So, like, we should talk about the ending. I'm going to just say right now, I'm gonna say the next 5 to 10 minutes, there's going to be a spoiler zone for A Way Out. We'll do a break after that, so you can fast forward probably.
We'll put a timestamp in.
Yeah, great. Cool. In the description. Cool. So...
Y'all talk about Leo's. I'll talk about Vincent's.
Totally. Like, I want to talk a little bit about the lead up because, like, it's funny. Like, Rob,
the terrible, terrible lead up.
God. Well, so Rob talks about the linearity of some of those sequences being detrimental, and I was pretty much along for the ride until the very end, where I was like, "Fuck it, man! I'm on a roller coaster," and I'm like, "High five! Like, let's go!" Like, I know I'm not really in control of this thing, but because of the story that Patrick and I had built up, in which Leo and Vincent very clearly fall in love. I'm not kidding. Like, very clearly. They very clearly bond and, like, have this... And, you know, they fall in love. They're very close. They're very clearly, like...
Even if there's a world where, in our fiction, they didn't kiss, they became, like, very emotionally, yes. like really good...
They're
really
ride or
good
die.
Buds.
They are ride or die, exactly. And a big part of the ride or die stuff comes from the ways in which they open up to give each other advice about each other's families and share their vulnerability and the ways in which they've been wounded by Harvey. I mean, it all concludes with this final confrontation with Harvey, where you have to go and kill him, and he takes one of you hostage, and the other one shoots him, and you get away, and you get back the diamond, and the big revelation... And this was part of the problem was, like, I think we'd been saying this was going to happen for 3 hours. Was like, oh, right, Vincent is a cop. Of course Vincent's a cop.
Austin, I want to say that when I was playing through this with Nick, I kept early on when you get the guns and Vincent disarms the woman, immediately I was like, Vincent is a cop. And you, even before that, you were like, there is something going on.
Oh, he, yeah.
Like, and you and me were like very, I noticed that while you were streaming.
We
were
know
very
who a
insane.
Fucking cop
we
is.
Knew.
You know what
oh,
I'm saying?
We know
when there's a
we
cop
know.
In the building.
Yes, yes.
And like that revelation was kind of like nothing. He was like, yeah, okay, he's a cop. That
of
was
course
one of the
is.
Three things
of
that
course.
Could have happened here. And then it turns into, and then it tries to do something. I felt like the inverse of the Brothers ending. I'm not going to spoil Brothers, but if you played Brothers, think about what the ending of Brothers is like. And here, what it does is it says, okay, you two have been working together the whole time. Now you're going to fight each other. And it turns into like a chase sequence and then like a weird arena shooter. It's like you're on one side of this warehouse. I'm on the other side, hiding behind cover, shooting at each other. And all Patrick and I wanted to do was like, How do we subvert this? Like,
yeah,
my Vincent, how long did you walk around that arena trying to find a way out?
Rob, we started picking off each other with one bullet at a time, hoping that there was a world where like we could get the health to like either we would leave it to chance to like whatever the game interpreted as the last bullet, and we'll just take it out of our hands, or like try and find some other like. Mysterious third ending, which the game should have had. Like, if you're going to do that, even if it wanted to narratively set up, oh, these two are opposed to one another, this is me, like, not wanting to give the game too, like, I can still like the game and also be like, yo, like, let's, like, be real about what this game actually accomplished and how much, like, players put onto it through, like, their own roleplay and interaction, because the game didn't, like, it didn't serve, you know, an option for the choice that, you know, even take away our, like, our gay fantasy with this game. Like
gay reality, thank you.
Yeah, gay reality, let's be real.
Sorry, I apologize. Like, there should have been a third option where, like, these two find some other way.
Right. Fuck it, man. You know what? We're going to both go to jail. Like, you know what? There isn't a good way out for us, but we're going to go back in.
You had to shoot me in the boat? Like, fuck you. Like,
I was having a really hard time watching you guys be so, like, hesitant to go in, because when I played as Vincent, and even though I was like, okay, he's bad, like, like ACAB, like he gotta go. Uh-huh. I was still going full in. Like Nick and I were like fucking battling it out until the very, very, very end.
Like, and the thing for me was very much like the thing that was kind of tricky about the cat and mouse stuff was like I needed. If it was reversed somehow, if Vincent as like a character is such a fuck up, right? Is like so, like all he has that is that he's actually worked on that's become good is his relationship with Leo. He at the time of the ending, he has not like fixed his relationship with his wife. He does not really have a relationship with anybody in the police that you actually see in any meaningful way mm-hmm. outside of the woman he calls. Like, oh yeah, even though I'm just an accountant, I can get you a plane real quick. also, the fucking police were cool with you just like going to a different country and killing a crime lord and taking back. Like that was
no, I know.
They really wanted
I know.
That diamond.
They really wanted that it diamond. Really the Black Orlov needed to come home. Yeah. And so for me, it was weird. It's like I could imagine being Leo's player and being like, I gotta kill this guy. But I could as Vincent, I'm never gonna be like, I have to kill Leo. Like I couldn't. Like I, it doesn't. He's so clearly the one in the right here, despite being the career criminal.
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah,
I still went in. I still went in. I like that's the whole. Point of it, right, is like the game builds you up to really kind of like this relationship and be into this dynamic that they have, and then you have to tear it apart.
But I don't as Vincent.
I think Vincent could have made could have gone to the ledge of like I'm gonna follow through. I mean, his brother died, right? Like, so right. Like I get that, like he would maybe turn him in, but I could like in our version of this goddamn story, like he still has a change of heart at the end. Like I reject the narrative the game proposes.
Right,
it goes against everything I had instilled in it up to that point.
Quick thing, first of all, I love that like his motivation for seeing this through is like my brother died. Like his brother like was also a cop.
Yeah.
It was like the undercover agent that they lost on Vincent's operation. Okay, yeah, why not? But I'm right there. Like when the game sort of returns you to gun mode
mm-hmm.
and turns you against each other, my partner looked at me and she's like, "So we're gonna Point Break this thing, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
Just like point the gun toward this yep. guy and go like, ah, you know, that was the plan. We spent a long time trying to figure out how we're going to do that because like there's. It's just not, it's not really convincing that at this point, these two characters, particularly Vincent, are going to turn that hard and be like, well, I guess it's pistols at dawn then.
I can imagine, I just think I can imagine Vincent saying like, listen, shoot me in the leg and then go. Otherwise, you're going to get killed here. Like the cops
yeah.
are going to kill you. Just fuck
I wish.
Me up and just you
I wish.
Run and we'll never talk again. And like... I'm fine with hard binary ending, like whatever. I think and the endings themselves. I think so. We got the one where Vincent dies, and Leo goes to hand the note that Vincent wrote to his wife about like, hey, I fucked up. I'm a bad husband. I'm a bad dad. I got obsessed with this shit. I love you. Like, can we try to start over? And that moment works for me, even though I think it's kind of cheesy. And then like seeing Leo with his family driving away, I don't know how he's gonna keep getting away. Like he killed a fucking cop. That's bad news. Like, the police are bad at letting you go after you've
and
done
presumably
that.
Presumably, Harvey's, like, group, like, it wasn't just him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right, there's probably right, other right, people right. coming for him. But whatever. I choose to look past those things, because if you start, like, examining
yes.
the plot holes of this game, then it's the whole cards start falling apart. So I just choose to accept the logic and focus on. And, like, I thought that, like, emotional, like, diversion worked. I think it could have worked better had the game found... more efficient ways to earn it, as opposed to like, here's a game that we're going to give you lots of choices, and we're going to give you one at the end, but like the thing up to that is not your like it just didn't like,
right.
like thematically work with what the game was doing mechanically
right.
in a way that I found satisfying.
Give me like the let's get in the car and get out of here, Leo. Like, you know
yeah,
what? Fuck the cops.
Go off into the sunset. Fuck our families.
Or give me the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid ending of like, we're going to get back in this plane and try to take off, and the cops just blow us the fuck out of the sky. Like, with my true love. The
yeah.
other ending is brutal. Danica, do you want to talk
yeah,
about
yeah,
that
yeah.
one?
So,
you got that one naturally.
I got Vincent's ending because, like I said, like, the person I was playing with, we were just like shooting each other as much as we could. And I think he made like one slip up. So I was able to get an extra shot in or an extra like towards the end when you have to like do that final thing that kills him.
Yeah.
And Vincent's ending, I it's not as good as Leo's. Obviously, Leo is the protagonist. But Vincent's ending, you kill Leo and then you go to the trailer park where his wife and kid are, and you go in and you like give her the news, and it's just silent, like you can't hear their conversation, and you just see her start like beating Vincent's chest and like pushing him, and like she's so upset and so sad, and I was bawling my eyes out, like I was so embarrassed. Because I just, the moment that I picked up that gun and like you have that slow pan where you're aiming, I just started crying. I was like, oh man, this is like really fucked up. And then Vincent goes back to his wife and they work their shit out.
They do. And like instead of handing her the letter, it was like, I love you. He hands her the like, I'm resigning from the FBI or whatever it is I'm part of. Yep. Oh, I guess that's the thing. They were the feds, right? That wasn't like local police. So I guess maybe the feds could swing some sort of extradition, or I'm going to go to Mexico and kill this drug lord. Also, Harvey sucks. Yeah, what a bad villain. Ugh. Anyway.
Oh, he
that
sucks.
That part worked
he,
for
he...
us, actually.
Really?
So, no, not all the shooting and everything, but putting Harvey down was immensely satisfying.
Yes.
This was a cool sequence where, so you walk into the most obvious fucking trap in the world because your characters are dipshits.
Yep.
Harvey's like, all right, I'm putting my gun down. Now I'm going to open the safe and reach around in there for the Black Orlov.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And it's like, oh no, there's a gun in the safe.
Also, like all of the callbacks to old movies, like that Harvey's entire house was Scarface.
Yeah,
that was just Scarface. Like you walk in and he's like, say hello to my little friend and like starts shooting. Like,
well, and that's the movie. This game's reference points are all like movies you find in like a frat house basement library.
Yeah, it's perfect though. It's perfect. Like this is like these are the movies that Joseph Ferris would absolutely choose to call back to in that game.
Yeah, Scarface is a masterpiece. Just the best movie.
No, that's not what I'm saying though. It's very McDonald's.
Right. It's actually like the opposite, right? Which is like this whole game should be played as if you're having a 40 with your friend.
Right,
and like
right, just
completely bullshitting the way through it, your way through it, even though it sells itself as if you should be pouring yourself a nice glass of whiskey.
Right,
you know?
I'm like, okay, so this is Dog Day Afternoon, the game.
Right.
100% it's not that.
Not at all.
By the way, just watch that movie. That movie fucking owns. you should watch it. It's great. But, so he gets the gun out of the safe and immediately grabs, puts the gun on Leo. And, well, that's how we did it. It ended up in our game. So he's holding the gun to Leo's head, and he's like, I'm walking out of here. And I have control of my character with a gun, but, like, now you're shooting super inaccurate. Like, you can't figure out, like, you can't get a clear shot. And my partner's like, okay, I can actually sort of steer him over this. I'm going to get him over this case and knock into it. And when I do that, you need to shoot him.
Right.
So she's like, all right, here it comes. And she jostles the guy and he's startled. And for just like a split second, and I'm sure, again, this is super on rails, but at that moment, like the shot is there. I take it, shoot him. Then we both have control over characters.
Yeah.
We both have our guns. And we just wailed on Harvey. Like it
I
was
shot him
just,
in the dick.
Oh,
you did.
100%. We just like opened him from stem to stern. Like he was just a mass of red texture as he went over that balcony. And we were both like, that was really satisfying.
Yeah.
And we feel closer as a couple having done that.
Aw, that's good. Imagine a version of this game that was just those moments, like, and knew that that's what the game was. And it was like a couple of, like, you stay criminals. You're like, maybe you're like co-hitmen who are going into places to get people. That'd be really good. I would actually really enjoy that.
So actually, this is where I think this game actually could have been a really good Dog Day Afternoon game. Because so this Dog Day Afternoon is about basically the worst bank robbery ever. Like the most fuck up, like hapless bank robbery in history. And the opening of the movie is these clowns basically like the bank tellers are trying to help them get through this without like fucking up and getting caught and getting everyone killed. They're like, okay, well, you probably don't want to start a fire. It'll trigger the smoke alarms. And they're like, right, don't want to do that. And then they start the fire and trigger the smoke alarms. I actually would love the version of this game, and the gas station sequence almost gets there, where you and your partner can like take these scenarios and spin them off in weird directions, right? Like, I thought you were watching the guy with the phone or something right. like that. And right. I just wish there were more sequences like that where there was enough, like, there were enough possibilities in the sequence that, like, you could end up having, like, expressing your version of your incompetent criminal mastermind in cool ways. And I really wish there were more moments like that in the game.
That whole sequence is really good, and we got out of it pretty cleanly. And I almost wish it had gone wrong, because I'm curious how bad it can go.
Oh, yeah. The
gas station robbery.
Oh, right, right.
Because, like,
right,
we got out yeah. without pulling a trigger. We got out without having, like, we got out, and the last thing that we saw was a cop crash his car randomly into a truck for no fucking reason. Yep, so, I'm curious, is there a version of that becomes, a standoff? Is there a version of that where you're like, oh shit, the cops are here. We got to figure out another way out.
It's probably short in the same way that, like, anytime anything goes wrong in that game, it's like a very short, oh, this person just died, it immediately restarts, yeah. you know?
New sequence.
And doesn't even restart from the beginning, usually. It's just like, yeah. all right, well, you died, fix this last thing that you did that you messed up on.
Yeah. All right. We should take a quick break, and when we're back, we'll talk some more about some video games.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, welcome back to Waypoint Radio. We are going to dig into some other stuff today. We got a couple of directions we could take the second half of this podcast, I feel like we have some choices to make. We're planning a way out, and our dilemma is, which of these conversations do we want to have? There is the Patrick wrote about Fortnite, and it turns out Fortnite is more popular than anyone cares to admit conversation. There's the white people can't stop saying nigger conversation, which is a problem. There's the I watched Jesus Christ Superstar last night and cried a bunch conversation, but probably not that one. There's the making indie games is expensive and risky conversation. Anyone have which one of those do you want to pull out?
I mean, I think that the Fortnite and the white people can't stop saying the N-word conversation kind of go hand in hand,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So fair. We could have both of those.
We could. Fortnite is super popular. Patrick,
and it comes with free passes.
It does not. Do not. Oh, God.
Oh.
Patrick, do you want to talk about the story you published last week about Fortnite?
Yeah, I wrote a piece that basically was I on, you know, we've talked about Fortnite a little bit in the past, and there was like a road that there were two paths to take in 2017 at a certain point, and we had already gone far enough down the PUBG road that we didn't go down the Fortnite road. Or if we did, it didn't really appeal to anyone else. And so no one made the pitch to have everyone kind of get into it. But at a certain point, like, you know, in especially early 2018, you know, as when the mobile version was starting to launch in beta, it's like, I need to understand a little bit more about this. And like the tipping point for me was when my wife's sister came over and she asked me, can you explain to me what Fortnite is and why none of the like boys and men in my life want to hang out anymore? Yeah. Because all they want to do is play Fortnite. And she doesn't play video games, like you know, like she plays games, you know, like in the way that lots of people play games, but like she definitely not a capital G gamer. And so for her to name check Fortnite and then you know, it having impeded on her personal life in a way, it was like, okay, like this is, you know, this, there are big games, and then there are cultural phenomena. And it's like, okay, at this point, like, Fortnite's a cultural phenomenon. So I just pretty much put it all out on Twitter. Was just like, hey, like, tell me stories about Fortnite in your life. And like, the thread I found was a lot of what was happening in schools. And so I wrote this story that kind of just kind of chronicles a bunch of different stories of teachers and parents dealing with like the phenomenon of Fortnite. Like, you know, you have you know, a lot of women, like both at all girls schools and in like, you know, mixed gender in middle schools and high schools, where the women are playing Fortnite partially because like it's become big enough a phenomenon that like they are interested. But like there seemed to be like a meaningful percentage that to be just be part of the conversation with all of the people they hang out with in their life, whether it's their boyfriends or just the guys in their group. Everyone's talking about Fortnite, and so they are playing Fortnite and keeping up with the memes just so they can participate in the conversation. You know, there are prom invitations that are referencing, you know, like winning duos matches that are referenced. There is like teachers are using Fortnite as a vehicle to like both connect with their students. It's sort of like various teachers told me it was a way to kind of short circuit the authority figure gap that you often have with like kids that you have trouble connecting with, because they just look at you as the teacher and, you know, like not someone that they can just talk to and connect with as a person. And it's like teachers were playing Fortnite, and then because they could talk about Fortnite with their kids, they were able to like connect them on a level that just wasn't happening before. So, I mean, go read the story for a bunch of more stories in that vein. But I just kind of came away with a sense that it makes sense that Fortnite is as big as it is when you think of the Minecraft generation. And obviously, like, Fortnite has a, you know, this building aspect to it. So the idea that, like, a building shooter would, that has creative elements,
right,
would connect with that generation, like, makes all, I mean, obviously hindsight's 2020, but, like, it makes all the sense in the world that this game has found
its, a huge its way audience,
in,
yeah,
in an audience that has grown up with the idea that creativity is part and parcel with what you do in video.
That is James wrote in. We had a letter in the question bucket. I'll just read this. If you have questions, gaming@vice.com with a subject question. James says, hey, over the last month, I listened to your whole podcast catalog, and man, did Austin become the exasperated dad more and more with each new person to join after Patrick. Extremely good. Recently, the discussion at Waypoint and other websites has been about being blindsided to a degree by the success of Fortnite. And that's interested me. I dislike the building aspect of the game, and I've heard that sentiment echoed in the gaming industry discussions I've heard. In Battlegrounds, though, I'm all about the loadout and attachments. Do you think this is a generational divide, one where the younger-leaning Fortnite player bases like the building sorry, I'm going to read it again. One where the younger-leaning Fortnite player base likes the building, having been weaned on Minecraft and the older and older generation. And the older generation simply prefers the Modern Warfare-style loadout system, like the one that's in PUBG. Are there other gameplay mechanics that seem to be split on generational lines like this? The thing that's weird for me on this is that, like, I love Minecraft and, like, do love building. And liked Fortnite by itself, let's see if I can come up with another... Someone finally called me out on this, that every time we do this, I come up with a new fake Fortnite name for what the other mode is. Have y'all picked up on that?
No.
All right, so the actual name for Fortnite, the single player version of it, the non battle royale version. Also, I sometimes say, I actually say battle royal by mistake. That one's just me saying battle royal. But the PvE version is called, and now I've actually forgotten it. Now I'm like just gonna own myself. It's not Save the Night. Now I've completely forgotten the name. Whatever. Every time I just come up with some new bullshit to say, Save the World. Save the World is the name of the main Fortnite mode.
But sometimes I love that. I say Miku Save song.
The
Night.
Sometimes I say Survive the Plague. Sometimes I say it's the Survive the Storm. So today I'm gonna say.
Are you doing that on purpose or just
the first,
pulling it out
the
of your
first
ass?
Time I wasn't, and then I immediately was like, oh, that's a good.
Why
bit.
Don't we? Hey, can you say? Can you just say The World Is Mine, because that's a really good Miku song?
Yeah, The World Is Mine.
Yeah.
There we go. Fortnite, can the I world just, is mine. Do you want me to just...
I just want to say really fast that my... Because that piece did so well, my boss messaged me and was like, yeah, you... one of the other bosses of... One of the other heads of social was like, hey, what's a Fortnite?
Oh, my God. That's... There's... Good. Hi, Jack. The thing is, like, I loved Save the World. I really played it a lot with my friends the first week it came out. And then, like, bit by bit, I was just distracted by other stuff. And then was like, oh, I wonder how that's going. And, like, by then, they had launched Battle Royale. And that was just like, fuck. Like, ugh, so frustrated by it. Not because of the building stuff, but because I liked the building stuff in another mode where it actually felt creative to build, where it actually felt like, oh, I'm building my base and, oh, look at this cool tower. Like, we were going to build together. We're going to build this whole big, cool looking four, you know, four level structure or whatever. And in the Battle Royale mode, like, that's not what building looks like. Like, you can do that stuff, but the pros, the people who do good, the people who win when I play Fortnite Battle Royale are all building the same sort of four walls plus a staircase to hide under structure. So then they kind of duplicate going upwards. I'm sure there are names for these structures. Like, I just haven't been watching enough stuff to know the kind of jargon yet. And that stuff doesn't appeal to me, largely not because of I don't like building, but because I'm not good at that sort of speedy building stuff. And I'm sure if I rebound my controls and, like, and practiced, I'd get better, but I don't have the time to practice the way that I did with, like, Battlegrounds, where we were streaming it every day. So, you know, it's one of those things where I'm thinking, I'm like, hey, is there a way for us to do that so that I can actually understand how to fucking play this game? Do y'all feel like there's a generational thing here happening? I mean, like...
Yes. Oh, 100%. 100%. I think that, and you can just tell by the people who are playing it, and my friends who are playing it are, they're a little bit younger than me. You know, they're like 23 to 25.
So children, got it.
They really, really, really love the game. They love building. Anytime they're like, hey, play with us, I'm like, I'm not going to build. And they're like, we'll do it. We like it. Just come on. And so I do think that there's like a thing here with age difference and who is more into it and who is not. And I think that if we gave it a chance and we played it more, we just don't play it. If we sat down,
maybe
if we sat down and had a group, like, few hours of it, then we might want to play it more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like how it shoots. I don't like, I, yeah. Mm. Noises, Austin noise, just
exasperated. Well, dad,
so here's the other thing that I think does make it a generational thing. It's free to play. It's on PC. It's on console. It's now on mobile.
It runs on crappy computers.
It runs on crappy computers. Unlike Battlegrounds, which Super did not for a long time, and still does.
Still does. Like even you know, even now when it's like, you know, far better optimized, like you're not going to be able to, like, take like a a $300, you know, I mean, a Chromebook's not going to run anything, but like people are like playing these on, like, you know, crappy MacBooks and stuff like that. And that's just never going to be what PUBG is. And I think the free part is an incredibly, like, I think there's a lot of reasons that Fortnite became what it is. Like, you know, some of it's luck, some of it's circumstance, some of it's Minecraft generation. But, like, also the free part is a huge, enormous component of it. Like, because, like, the ease of accessibility for, like, all sorts of people across all sorts of devices, like, is, like, a huge part of it. Like, if that game was $20, like, it would probably still be popular, but it wouldn't be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The
then again, Minecraft costs money, so, you know, who knows.
Yeah, true. The attached conversation here is that Fortnite streamer Ninja, who so recently got to play with Drake, his love of hip hop has already come around on him, bit him in his fucking ass because he was attempting to rap along to a Logic song, which, honestly, first mistake. Second mistake, he said nigga where Logic didn't say it. I don't know if y'all know, Logic is half black. That's a it's a very common thing that Logic likes to remind you of. And, you know, from one half black eye to another, shout outs to Logic. There's nothing but love, except I don't really like his music. And Ninja just dropped nigga in there. Like, he just dropped it in. Like, he didn't.
It didn't exist.
It didn't exist. That,
it didn't
those
exist.
Lines,
so he wasn't even being faithful to the rhyme.
No, I think he rhymed it with indica, I think.
No, it was like when rappers throw in just like a word to
like an ad lib
to fit in. Yeah, to like fit in to make a line sound more cohesive. Like, that's what he was doing.
And also, want to be clear, he's just kind of like, when I say slurring here, I don't mean using slurs. He was just slurring through the verse in general. Like, he was just like, and a word now. And like, that's like, he didn't have any sort of words. And that's the one he reached for. And so that blew up, and that the conversation around that became about, like, well, it's in the song. It's like, when it's not in the song, yeah, but the rappers use it, and it's like, all right, this fucking sucks. But this conversation is exhausting.
But the thing is he wasn't having that conversation.
No, no. He had an apology. He had a... I think... So I read that apology. He tweeted out what he said was, while I'm confident that most of this is a misunderstanding, I recognize that it's my responsibility to never let there be this kind of a misunderstanding. More than anything, I hate that any of my friends, fans, or viewers might feel disrespected. It's my job, and hopefully I'm usually good at it, to make everyone feel welcome, valued, and safe to be themselves. So I apologize to anyone who might feel hurt, because I never want that. It's my stream, and it's all on me to make that right. And he continued.
How come these apologies never just say, I am sorry for saying X?
Right, and often,
like, I am sorry for doing this, and instead it's, I am sorry if you had your feelings.
I'm sorry that I'm confident this was mostly that most of this is a misunderstanding. It's a bad
way to
start.
Which part?
Right. There's no part of it is. I understand what happened. And one of the other things that kind of boiled up around this was like, oh, Ninja has had some shit in his past also, and that is stuff that kind of got wiped before he kind of blew up. Like, he did a lot of the same sort of, like, bad faux Chinese accents that Dr. Disrespect did.
Right.
Just, like, before he blew up in this way.
But he also seems to have, and I will say to his credit, like, since his Halo days, he does seem to have improved just as a person, and the way that he acts a lot. But he still uses language like saying triggered when he shouldn't be, and things like that. I mean, he said that during the Drake stream. So he still has a long way to go and needs to keep working on that. Like, I do think that it's good that he immediately came forward with an apology, but the apology needed work.
Well, and that apology is this, like, for me, the thing is, like, if you're gonna say, I think this is mostly a misunderstanding, what you're doing is enabling your fan base to be like, this was mostly a misunderstanding. This is, y'all don't understand. Not saying, like, I used a word I shouldn't have used, and that reflects the fact that I use it privately, and that I shouldn't use it privately, and that's something I'm going to work on, is a thing that, like, you have to address, and you should be really straight up about that. Because the thing that this reveals is, like, when the cameras aren't on, this is the thing he does, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so frustrating, and part of the reason it's so frustrating is because, even in a case like this, where it is so much less, he was just using a filler word. It does reveal something about private behavior. And then it's frustrating that when we can't even address those issues directly, it's frustrating enough when we can't address those issues directly. But the other thing that happened this weekend from CSGO commentator
Sadakist.
Right, Sadakist, which is a great, good name already, ready to go.
Off to a good start.
Who got very drunk on a birthday stream, and he pointed, other people have been pointing to his drunkenness as a reason for what happened, instead of any sort of deeper
reasons. People love to do that. People love to do that.
They truly do. Just straight up said, like, I'm at 50%, this isn't even my very best, wait till I go 100%, you fucking nigger. And it's like, yo... Okay, that line is very meant to be the word nigger there with a hard, he actually goes like nigger. So, he's hard R on that shit, and is like very much about, here is a word that I can drop in to insult you.
In the same way PewDiePie, this is 100%, the same thing PewDiePie did.
100%. And so much of the response from other people who were either on that stream or who were around him was like, he shouldn't have gotten that drunk. He should have taken better care of himself. You never want to get that wild.
But that's another problem. That is a separate problem from this one.
Yes. And on top of that, like, this is a guy who was also, you know, said that someone should kill themselves in a very, in a very visual and graphic way on the same stream. And, like, it's one of those things where if people aren't going to confront these parts of their community, these parts of the community are going to stay there. He has come out and issued an apology since then via Facebook. And, like, as always, there are things to be done there. I'm not going to read his whole apology. Again, if you go to his Twitter or his Facebook, you can find it. Because it's a pretty lengthy thing. And he at least does say, like, there are no excuses. Racism is inexcusable and bad. And he's
but
gonna,
I'm not racist. Did he say that?
I
didn't read the apology.
He kind of more says like, he's like, I'm an open and honest person, and I often state my opinion no matter what. I didn't have any bad intentions, etc. Mm-hmm. It's just mm-hmm. racism mm-hmm. is disgusting. Mm-hmm. He's not going to attend an upcoming pro league event.
Good. He shouldn't.
He's gonna like take a step back, basically.
That's good.
Which is good, but like, it's one of those things where I don't know how. I mean, Rob, you're much closer to this community than I am. But like, how does esports start to reckon with this shit? Because like, we've talked a lot about how streaming needs to reckon with it, but how does esports need to reckon with this?
I mean, the problem is so esports is too broad, right there, because like right. every game is its own separate culture, and so like League of Legends, for instance, really aggressively moved to expunge the stuff from the community as best they could. So Riot really tried to enforce some standards on their own personalities, and since they own the broadcasts, right. they were able to really be effective with that. They gave people, you know, media training to start with, and then I assume other various sorts of HR-related training in the intervening years. They moved, I think, to basically make sure that the League of Legends Reddit reflected what they right. wanted to. Counter-Strike is a Valve property, which basically means it enjoys sort of a benign neglect in some ways, less benign mm-hmm. in others. And that community has been defined sort of by the start as a very, un-PC culture type place where the voices and leading authorities are overwhelmingly white men with a history of saying borderline stuff at best, sometimes outright discriminatory or racist or sexist stuff at worst. And those figures are still there and are still widely respected and widely regarded within that community. Right. And if you like, and the community's kind of rallied around figures like that and has made it very clear that this is a place where PC values will not hold sway, and any effort to change it is sort of an attack on the community identity. So I'm not surprised that something like this happens, because Counter-Strike, like a lot of spaces, and I think this makes Counter-Strike a lot more like the general core gaming audience, in general. Counter-Strike remains a place where a lot of very obliviously privileged young white men feel like they should not be held account for their actions, and believe that as long as they are not actively attacking women physically or putting on a hood at a Klan rally, they are not really racist. They are not really mm-hmm. misogynist. Mm-hmm. It's just words. It's just jokes on the internet. I'm not surprised right. that something like this would happen there. And it is troubling the degree to which, like, the sort of work that's been done in more progressive spaces to understand why language like this is unacceptable, why you are not entitled to use it, why you do not say these things to people. Those lessons, that instruction has not even made it into that discourse at all in a lot of ways. Right. Yeah, I mean, how does esports handle it? The problem is there's always a line of whataboutism that I think stops reform in yeah. cases like this. Well, if you're going to punish Sadakist, then how come so and so is still hosting streams? Like, why did Thorin get a pass on some of the things he said in the past? Why does Richard Lewis get a pass despite him having had some really unprofessional interactions with other personalities in the space? And I actually mm-hmm. think the answer is maybe that nobody should have gotten those passes. Those right. passes were wrongly right. issued, or there are differences in degree and intent that need to be considered. But at this point, the reaction in CSGO in general feels like nobody say anything for a minute until things die down, and then go back to normal, right? Issue your apology, sit out an event or two, and then eventually you'll be back in everyone's good graces, because, hey, you're part of the community, you're face of the community, and everyone sort of aspires to be you.
Yeah, I think that that's a pretty big thing. There was a really great thread going around on Twitter about how the fighting game community dealt with this to some degree. Not that the fighting game community does not have its own problems still, especially around misogyny, especially around, you know, access and safety for women players and spectators and all that. But like, there is a it is a much more diverse grouping of players, and there have been moments of reckoning inside of that community, largely driven by the people who very literally helped to make it grow as a broadcast medium. People who were in charge of streams, like, put into place certain sorts of requirements. And those requirements helped to enact a sort of soft reform in terms of what player behavior was like. And that's in spite of the FGC's long-running kind of desire to remain loose and hard and, like, be a place where there is shit-talking. I'll add the link to that thread also in the show notes. All right.
I know, just really quick, I know Rob has to go. He has a heart out, but I just want to say, this is something that I've been, like, open about since I got on the internet, but, like, growing up in Petaluma, which is, like, kind of a bubble, back in the day in high school and whatever else, large chunk of my friends were people of color, and the music that I grew up on was, like, R&B and hip-hop. If you can't tell, like, the only music I ever talk about is hip-hop. And there was a time, like, back in the day where if I was rapping a song, like, I would just rap every single word in the song. It didn't fucking matter. And it really took me getting onto Twitter and surrounding myself with smart, progressive people and, like, getting outside of my bubble to learn that, like, the way that I had grown up was sheltered in certain ways. And like, it's my responsibility to, like, always look back at those times and, like, continue to hold myself accountable. Like, even when I say shit, like, you know what it is. You know what I mean? Right, like I constantly want to be, like thinking about the shit that I'm saying, looking back and being like, okay, why am I saying this stuff? Like, AAV doesn't have, like, a place, shouldn't have a place in my vocabulary. And I think it's super, super important that these people who are public figures especially are just constantly evaluating the way that they talk, the way that the white people that they're surrounded with talk, and holding themselves accountable. Because if not, you kind of just, like, stick in this bubble. And especially if you have a large audience that doesn't say shit to you, like, you just sit there thinking that it's okay or not caring that it's okay.
Right, right.
So it's a problem. It's a problem.
It is.
And I'm very, very glad. That's one of the main reasons that I'm so thankful that I got on Twitter, because the town that I come from is such a bubble. Like, and I was like a stupid teen.
Right. Which is, like, so. I am not someone who holds it against teens who don't know better, or, like, I hold it against them in the short term. I'm like, all right, I fucking hope you come out of this and grow, and, like, let me explain why you fucked up. Like, let me explain why this is a problem. And and once you have that information, like, it's on you to take those steps. And you don't lose anything by taking those steps. You know what I mean? Like, you're not, whatever you think you're gaining by saying, you know, by using the term, you're losing so much more. And that is not it's such a like, cut off my nose to spite my face decision. It's such a fruitless decision to go to bat for its use. Like, you don't, all you're doing is ensuring that you can hurt some people. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. and taking a sort of joy in the fact that you think it's rational that you be able to use it, despite the pain. And, like, being a well acclimatized, a mature adult is often doing things that some part of your brain thinks is, like, a silly thing to do, but that brings joy or helps other people. Saying bless you when someone sneezes doesn't mean shit. Like, none of us think there's a demon. No one thinks that, like, that you need to be blessed when someone sneezes. But bless you, like, recognizes a degree of humanity. you know, mm-hmm. or Gesundheit, tight, or whatever you say when someone sneezes, right? Like, right. no one gains anything. We could all go through our lives without ever saying that to anybody. Holding a door open, rarely. You know, there are cases where someone's, like, carrying some shit, and you're like, all right, I'm going to open the door for them to carry. But then, like, someone's behind me, I'll open the door for them. It is such a small step to make. And we do those things all the time, and those things don't have a history of oppression tied to them. They don't yeah. have a very yeah. specific material direct link to a history of violence, of systemic violence, and of personal violence. And if, like, not addressing that in yourself again and again is where it becomes a real failure.
You are not the only person in your world, and yeah. your friends are not the only person in your world. The circle that you're part of is not the only circle in your world. Like, it goes beyond that, and everything... Everything you say, if you are a public figure, everything you say exists.
And if in 2018, online. You might be a public figure sooner than you think. You never know when someone is going to dig up your tweets or your streams. Like, mm-hmm. even if it's just you and your 12 friends, like, get in the habit of straightening yourself out, because one day you will be on a stage, and better to be in the right place now, you know?
Yep.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us. I know Rob has to cut out. Real quick, do people have recommendations? Does anyone have waypoints for the week? The one that I'm going to quickly do is Minute, a game that comes out later this week. It's a very cute little kind of adventure game in which you have a minute to explore kind of a 2D black and white world and solve puzzles. Each time your life lasts only a minute, but there's kind of like long-term progression you can make. Danielle's working on a review. It's really cool. Any other waypoints for the week?
I think this is like kind of obvious, but because I played so much of it over the weekend, I'm going to recommend Ni No Kuni 2.
Sure.
Everyone's talking about it, but it's as someone who loved the first one, it's incredible. So,
Rob.
Been getting into watching Counterpart on Starz.
Oh, interesting.
Which is J.K. Simmons, parallel universe sci-fi. It's very like transdimensional Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
That's a hell of a pitch.
That sounds like your shit. Like, it's basically that stylistically and everything. So yeah, it's cool. Check it out.
Awesome.
I'm trying to find this movie that I watched over the weekend. I can't find it.
Was it a horror movie? What was it?
I don't know. I can't find it. I'm trying to see.
Skybound.
No, I wish it was Skybound. I don't know. I'll have to do it on Friday.
All right. Find it. Sit on it. Come back around on Friday. As you do it for us, I'm Austin Walker. Follow me on Twitter @Austin_Walker. Patrick, where can people find you?
Find me @PatrickLubick.
Rob Zachney.
@RobZachney.
Danica.
Danica Harrod.
There it is. Follow Waypoint, twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/WaypointVice. And we'll be back on Wednesday for, we're going to do an article read of, Rob had a really great article on MLB The Show. And then after that, we're probably not going to have a Friday show. And instead, we will be at PAX. So if you're going to be at PAX East, make sure to come out. We're going to be at the Bumblebee Theater on Saturday at 2:30. So it'll be the whole crew. Come watch us. It'll be great. Thank you as always to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. waypoint.zone/BOEN. Does anyone want to wish us well since Danielle isn't here?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Heated.
Nice work. Oh my God. Yes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.